Love the one you're with. What is it? And there's a rose and a fisted glove, something like that. Yes. And the eagle flies with the dove.
And if you can't be with the one you love, love the one you with.
That's it. Well, the one I'm with is Rob Paparossi, and he's playing that on Etruscan Soul. You're due for a new album. This was a while ago.
Yeah.
This is when we met.
2009, yeah.
When you first came on for this album. And it's a terrific album. I still go back to it from time to time. But also we've worked together, as it were, on the Electric Butter record.
And, yes.
And you came up to Mohunk and blew the roof off and have gone back since and blown the roof off. And now you're going to be blowing the roof off of Darth Ann's place on Sunday. What are you going to do? Who are you going to have? Like Darth Ann's place, Darth Ann Kirk, the mother of us all at WBGO. Time to time she puts on these shows. And it's you this Sunday.
Yeah.
Two shows, right?
Yeah. Well, Darth Ann, you know, she kind of came out to hear my band a few times, you know, years back, and we struck up a great relationship, and she's had me do some things here in Newark. I played the 350th anniversary and all that stuff. But this Sunday, she said, I got something different. It's like a jazz brunch. I said, well, Darth Ann, I'm like a blues guy, you know. She goes, I know. And she said, but I think this is perfect for what we're doing. You know, we've had Catherine Russell, we've had all these great acts come in, but if you can come in and just do what you do. And I said, well, I'll be glad to. And this Sunday I'm going to come in with a quartet: John Korba, my piano player and musical director, and Sue Williams on bass, acoustic and electric bass, and Andrea Valentini on the drums, who I worked with Blood, Sweat, and Tears for 6 years. And we're going to put on a little show playing everything from Alan Toussaint to Fats Domino, you know, and beyond.
Well, then, Alan Toussaint to Fats Domino, you're still in New Orleans. You're going to go
okay.
Way beyond New
we'll
Orleans.
We'll go beyond that. Yeah. Well, maybe little Henry Mancini and Duke Ellington as well.
That's it. I mean, do you still do... I mean, there's been a group called Blood, Sweat, and Tears for years, right?
They're still working. They the drummer, Bobby Columbi, owns the name, and the band is out functioning as a band. I took over for David Clayton Thomas when he went back to Canada and left the band about, you know, 15 years ago. And I did it for about 6 years, but now they have this young guy, Bo Bice, who was like a winner on American Idol. And he's a great singer. He's a little young for... Blood, Sweat, and Tears, but he does a great job, and the band's still out working.
Bobby Columbi quit that band to become the president of Columbia Records for years.
That's right, and produce Jocko's first debut album.
And so many others,
and now he's like Chris Botti, yeah.
When I saw that David Clayton Thomas was the only cat from the original band, and then there's other ones that were there, like Lou Marini
went through it, George Wadenius, and so many jazz cats. Joe Henderson
was in the band.
Jocko for a minute.
Just an amazing. And you still do those songs, though. You like, I mean, those are, you seem just right for those guys.
Well, I had a great time doing it. I didn't know, when they called me up, I said, look, I'm more into the Electric Flag and Paul Butterfield, but I'll learn the book. And I learned the book, and I had a blast singing it for 6 years, yeah.
Speaking of which, I mean, I first heard you and Ed Palermo, we were trying to figure out how long ago it was you played that disco. The disco across from Dangerfield.
Oh, Decade, it was called.
Yeah.
It was called Decade.
And
it
was
on the east side, yeah.
Was that before Y2K? Was that in the previous?
It was right at that time. It might have been right before Y2K, yeah.
Yeah, and then it took about 13 years or more for this album finally to come together.
That's where it was born, and you were there. We brought you down to hear it because we knew you'd love it.
And it was great because I love the Paul Butterfield Blues Band and Michael Bloomfield, and I love the Electric Flag.
Yeah, yeah.
And actually, the Butterfield Band was the first blues record I ever bought. And you do all these great songs. And Jimmy Vivino was doing it back then with the big
band. That's
right. And to hear a great jazz big band, and Ed really knows how to do this,
yeah,
playing these songs was just a
knockout. Well, thanks. I'm so glad that that worked out because we had a ball making that record.
Rob Paparossi is with me in the Blues Break on the WBGO, and he's going to be performing this Sunday, two shows, 11:30 and 1:30. Darth Ann's place, and where is that? That's right up the street at NJPAC. Darth Ann being the mother of us all at WBGO, Darth Ann Kirk. Just wonderful. Now, since I've seen you, you've been doing, you're always doing something. What's this about the New York Philharmonic that they've been doing?
Oh, we got to plug that one, right? I got a phone call. A couple of weeks ago, I got a last-minute call to go in and play at City Center for a show I had done 32 years ago called Big River. Roger Miller wrote all the music.
That's right. I heard you were in that.
And I went back to, okay, I'll come in and do it. I had to re-remember the stuff. I went in to do the show. Well, one of the guys from the show said, after we finished the 8-show run, said, hey, Rob, what are you doing May 11th? And I said, I don't know. He goes, well, it's a Thursday night, and they're going to do New York Philharmonic's going to back up the movie at Lincoln Center. What movie? Breakfast at Tiffany's. And the famous Moon River comes from that, you know.
Right.
So thus the harmonica gig. And I said, well, okay. And then they sent me a whole book of music. There's actually a score that Henry Mancini wrote that goes with the movie. They ascertained that, and I got to play the whole movie. So it's going to be fun.
When is that going to be?
May 11th on a Thursday night at Lincoln Center with the New York Philharmonic.
All right. That'll be fun.
Yeah.
I'm sorry I missed Big River. I love the encores, but that's when I was just getting back from St. Louis and I was sick. I came back sick. And that's one of the rare shows in the 20 years of encores that I've missed. I remember the original Big River, but somebody said, Rob's in it. Rob's in it.
They do a great job up there at the encores. They're unbelievable.
They're wonderful. They do it very quickly.
Yeah.
There's almost no time for rehearsal.
I love the conductor, Rob Berman.
He's
just
great.
Fantastic.
He's great. Okay, so now you're playing with the New York Philharmonic, and you're playing at Darth Ann's place, and you're going to be playing with the Blues Brothers. So you're making a record, right?
Well, the Blues Brothers has I've been doing that since probably 2000. On and off, and we've been working hard with Steve Cropper and Blue Lumarini, our leaders. And last year, Lou and Steve said, hey, let's make a record. You know, it's been way too long. And we went into the studio last summer in Weehawken, and we brought in special guests like Joe Louis Walker, Dr. John, Eddie Floyd, Paul Schaefer, Matt Guitar Murphy, who was
in the band.
Who was originally in the band, but he's down in Florida now. He can't tour with us anymore. And we made this great record, had a blast.
And Blue Lou,
Blue Lou.
He was in the very first Blood, Sweat, and Tears. So there's
right.
All these connections between everybody.
It's funny, that New York cross-section thing, yeah.
And you basically, you don't call yourself what Bluesy was. You're yourself.
We're the original Blues Brothers band. So in other words, it's whoever's left and in the band. Steve Cropper and Lou Marini, obviously,
right.
And
yeah.
Duck has passed, and
right.
You know, and Matt can't tour with us anymore. Tom Bones Malone comes out with us too, and he's still around. And it's the band, and Dan really is still out there.
Dan Aykroyd,
and. John is gone, so we have the original Blues Brothers band, and occasionally Dan will come out and play with us. But we tour Europe and we tour Asia with this band, and people love it. They remember the song.
So when Dan Aykroyd comes out to YouTube, play harmonica
well,
duets?
Well, we'll do something if we do a fundraiser or something over here. Dan will come out, and yeah, he says, you know, hey, Rob, you know, set my amp up, and we'll both play, you know, that kind of thing.
Well, it's one thing for you to be singing, because you're singing the lead, actually. I mean, he didn't sing the lead ever, except on Rubber Ducky.
Yeah, it was mostly John that was the singer, yeah.
But he did mostly a lot of weird, goofy dancing. Now, do you do the weird, goofy dancing?
I try. I try to do it the best I can, and I do my own version of the goofy dancing. But Lou Marini had a great idea a couple years ago. Three singers. We're going to use three singers. So Tommy Pipes McDonald, who I came in to replace back in the 90s, at the end of the 90s, was available again. So he came back in. I joined, and Bobby Sweet Soul Harden as a third singer. So now we have three guys out front, and you're going to hear this if you play a little bit. I brought a sample of the record.
Play some of that.
You're going to hear each guy. The first one we're going to play is actually a song that Delbert McClinton had done years ago called Cherry Street, and this is Tommy Pipes McDonald singing on this one.
Wasn't he in the Blues Brothers 3?
Yes, Tommy Pipes McDonald.
He's in that group at the end of the showdown.
Well, the Blues Brothers 2000. That's our second movie. And he's in Throwdown, right. Tommy's
was that the second or the third movie?
Well, they only did two, I believe.
I thought there was a second one with Belushi, and then they came back
No. Actually, right before John died, I heard from the guys in the band that he signed another three-movie deal. right before he died, but that never, you know.
Because I talked to Joe Morton not too long ago, and Joe Morton was like, I said, how did you get into this? Because all of a sudden he was a Blues Brother. He was this cop who suddenly is transformed into one of the...
Oh, yeah, Joe Morton is also guesting on our record, and he's on Mojo. But, yeah, that's Blues Brothers 2000, which was around the turn of the century, and Tommy's just sang that last song that we did.
It's a totally silly movie, and then at the end, it's the band contest, and it's just one great blues guy after another. B.B. is in the band, Dr. John
Junior Wells, everybody.
Oh, they're all in, you know, and Jazz Cats,
and Jazz
Joshua
Cats.
Redman is in there.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And they're all doing all these, you know, doing New Orleans and
yep.
and whatever. And so that's the fun part of that movie. And there's this kid who's... supposed to be, I don't know, the avatar of Belushi.
Right.
I have no idea. But what you just heard is not yet out. It's an album going to be called Last Shade of Blue Before Black. It is the reconstituted Blues Brothers.
Yes, on Severn Records. It's going to come out. And sometime this year, I don't have a date yet, but we're getting very close.
And then touring. You got to back it up.
We're going to tour, yeah, like we do every year. In fact, the end of March, we're heading over to Germany, do a couple of gigs, and in Russia in April, and back over to Europe in July and August, yeah.
When you go over there, when you play, you know, and you have done this for a long time, when you play over yonder, somewhere away from these United States, how does this very American music go over? We know how jazz goes over. But that's just, you know, this is a music that's got lyrics and all kinds of other things.
Well, you know, it goes over as well as jazz goes over there. It's love. This music is love, too, because the people in Europe and Asia study the history of the music, unlike we don't do enough over here of, and they know all the players. They know the songs. So whether they're covered by the Blues Brothers or interpret, they know the music and they'll sing along. And it's a very fun vibe. When we go out and play before 10,000 people in a piazza, they're there to hear these songs, and we give it to them, and we jump around and do the show, and that's what makes it happen.
The Rolling Stones came out with a new album, and it's all covers. They do Little Walter songs mostly. Half the record is Little Walter songs.
Oh, the Stones, yeah.
Yeah, and it's like, what are they doing? I said, don't you know that's how I first heard
Red Rooster,
Willie Dixon songs. I heard the Rolling Stones doing before I ever heard Willie Dixon or Howlin' Wolf or any of the original
That's
cats.
Right. That's right.
Because all those British cats were nuts about, like, That's chess right. records.
Right.
And the blues.
Right. And if it wasn't for the popularity of the Stones and Brian Jones and Paul Butterfield over here and guys like John Mayall, we probably would have never gotten this music. It might have just passed us by. Who knows? You know.
I bought the Butterfield record because Sam Lay, the drummer, was wearing gold shoes on the cover. And I was a drummer.
You were sold.
And I thought, the drummer's wearing gold shoes. I want gold shoes.
Yeah.
And I was just, and he's wearing, and he sings Mojo on there.
He does sing Mojo. That's, right. That's the only song he
Sam
sings.
Yeah, yes, you're right.
So
tell us some more about this. I mean, you're going to do any of these, you're not going to do any of these songs on Sunday.
We'll probably sneak in a little Blues Brothers thing because I like to talk to the people and say, hey, here's something that I've been doing for years, and we also do it with the Blues Brothers. Like a song like She Caught the Katie. We open up every Blues Brothers show with that song because it's iconic. I mean, that's the song that opens up the first Blues Brothers movie, you know, in Chicago, and which was written by Taj Mahal and the blues mandolinist Yank Rachel, who, you know, passed. So I'll talk a little bit. We might even do a song like She Caught the Katie. Who knows what I'm going to do on Sunday. But we're going to give a little history lesson and have fun while we're doing it.
And he does that. I mean, Rob is one of the most entertaining cats you'll ever encounter in a concert. And a lot of us, because he's such a nice guy. You know?
Thank you, Michael.
Well, some of us in the world try to be, but you actually pull it off. And
Paul
you just
Schaefer.
Wrote that song.
I just wrote this for the record, and John Trope did a killer horn chart on it, and it's going to be fun.
You managed to get into your blues ISIS and Ebola and Donald Trump all in one sentence. I think that was terrific.
It's the 21st century technology.
There
blues,
you go, yeah. And 21st century blues. Rob Paparossi is going to be playing at Darth Ann's place on Sunday. That's right up the street from us at WBGO. It's at NJ Pack, and he's always a good time. And he brought along... Now, I have never seen this box.
Yeah, this is my little mini session box. You know, when a harmonica player does session work, you know, we got to be equipped, and you can't just go in with one harmonica.
Well, that's it, because like a saxophone player say, oh, it's going to be in B flat or it's going to be in G or
right.
something. You're playing the same instrument, but you got to change
right.
harmonicas.
That's right. Now, the harmonica goes back to hundreds and hundreds and maybe thousands of years ago, in China, they had an instrument called the shang, and it was a free reed that you blew into only one hole. So it was sort of like the first harmonica. I didn't bring a shang with me, but then the cousin to that became the jaw harp, which has one little bar in the middle, free reed, sort of. It's a metal reed. So that's the jaw harp. I actually played that in the Big River show a couple weeks ago. And then around the 1800s in Germany, they decided to make 10 reeds that were free reeds, but that you could push the air through your mouth. Same reeds as you'd have inside an accordion, but now you're going to have a tiny little one with 10 reeds on top, 10 reeds on the bottom. So you can inhale and you can exhale. And that's what a harmonica is. And they found their way over to this country probably around the mid-1800s when they started to mass produce them. This is a blues harp, which was tuned by this guy Richter. And so the tuning became just the standard tuning that the German and Bavarian bands could play chords and melodies on. So it was tuned to a chord.
That's so bizarre. You don't think of the harmonica as being German.
No, you don't.
You know, so they played like beer hall music on it.
Yeah, they played beer barrel polkas and, you know, I mean, well, they played like folk Bavarian music, and then it found its way to different parts of the world and became something different to the Celtic in Ireland and over here. The soldiers found it. The blues guys found it.
Somehow down in the Mississippi Delta.
No, the Delta guys found it.
And then it's going up the river.
And they figured out how to bend the notes on it, like... And they said, oh, okay, maybe we can work that into these little blues field hollers that we're doing like a... And it became whatever you wanted it to become, whatever style of music you were playing. The problem was it was very limited because you had one key, maybe, so you'd need 12 of these to actually play all keys of music. So it was tuned to one key. So later on in the 20s or the turn of the century, they said, you know what? If this harmonica is going to stick around, we might have to put something on it to make it chromatic enough so you could play in all 12 keys. And that's where the one with the button came along. The chromatic with the button came along around somewhere around the 20s. And when they added the button, that became the black notes on the piano. And that gave you chromaticism to play in all 12 keys. Oh. That kind of thing.
So you can play on all 12 keys on this one.
Yes, harp. I can play on all 12 keys. I don't have to keep picking up little blues harps too, but I can't bend the notes as well as I can on a blues harp. So there's a trade-off.
It's interesting. You're talking about the origins over in Germany and everything, and they're taking it as a serious instrument, and it comes over here, and they're probably Hohner and all these people who were starting to manufacture them.
Yeah.
They say, well, you know, it's just a toy. Well, no, it's not a toy. You can do all these things on it, as you obviously do. Do you do cartoons? Do you do?
And if they call you in for a movie thing, you never know what you're going to have to do. This is one. This is called the tremolo harp. I mean, we're on the radio, so people can't see it, but you're describing it to them. This is called an echo harp, and it was also used to simulate accordion type music or Bavarian kind of stuff. And this was also used a lot in Germany. So you hear a little wavering and a vibrato. They have two sets of reeds in there. One's tuned slightly higher than the other set, so it gives you a vibrating pulse. And that's an echo harp. In the studio, sometimes they might call you in and say, look at the cartoon on the screen. Winnie the Pooh just fell out of the tree. And this is called a polyphonia. It's a little bigger than a regular harmonica. And it's a glissando harp. We play glissandos on it.
Right.
That kind of thing for effects. If you go to do a movie soundtrack, you might have to have one of those in your bag. The Beatles decided to use a bass harmonica on a couple of their songs. It sounds like this. It's got real long reeds. You can only blow into it. You can't draw on it. You've heard this on Petticoat Junction. You've heard it on Sanford and Son on TV.
Okay.
So it's it's a bass harmonica. It's got a different texture to it. It's got very low reeds. Used for effect. Rockford Files. You heard it a lot on that, on the orchestrations on that. The Beatles also, the Beatles used it on Fool on a Hill. They also used it on For the Benefit of Mr. Kite. And they had this big one called the chord harmonica. If you listen to Being for the Benefit of Mr. Kite, a John Lennon song, he had Ringo and George manning the microphone, and one guy was playing the chord. Now, this chord harmonica, tell them how big it is,
Mike. It's 2 feet wide,
like
at least.
Larger than a Subway sub sandwich, right?
Yeah.
At the beginning of that song, you might hear... Well, the benefit, you know, and it goes on and on. But that was a chord harmonica played by Ringo and George and John conducting. There's all these different instruments that the harmonica became.
And you're not sliding your chops along those reeds. You actually played four staccato notes, as it were.
Four separate chords.
And on two different levels, like a double keyboard or something.
Yeah, two different levels. There's minor and major on top and diminished on the bottom. So it gets kind of complicated and wacky. But those old harmonica bands, like when you heard Peg of My Heart, that one guy played the chord, one guy played the bass, and one guy played the lead on chromatic.
We sometimes have given out the harmonicas at our children's show.
Yeah.
And I'm sure there are people who still think of the harmonicas just like a toy, right? But you are the example of how hardcore it is and how hard it is to really play.
If you want to play it like any other instrument, you got to put the time in, yes.
And you know, obviously Larry Adler came along and was inspiring people to compose concertos for the harmonica.
And John Sebastian's dad, too. John Sebastian Sr. and Larry Adler and Tommy Riley from Canada, they wrote, guys like Villa-Lobos and Vaughan Williams, they said, wow, these guys can play, I'm going to write for it. And they did. There's over 50 concerti written for the harmonica, believe it or not.
Toots Thielemans told me that when he went to a movie one afternoon, and there was Larry Adler playing the harmonica, and that was it. But he went out immediately and bought a harmonica, and then became the greatest living harmonicat. And I like to say harmonicat, except Jerry Murad stole it years ago.
Yeah.
Instead of harmonicist.
The harmonicist is, like, I guess, the technically correct term, but nobody knows what that means.
No.
It sounds like something on your back that you need to have
removed. But see, I like harmonicat. I think that works just fine.
Yeah.
Okay, now what do you play most often?
I started out playing blues until my mother told me who Larry Adler was, and I figured, okay, I better figure this out. But the regular blues harp is what I get called for a lot. When I did Big River, the show starts... So that's the little blues harp. And a lot of people like it for country and for blues because you can bend on it and stuff like that. But on Sunday at Darthan's place, I'm going to play that. I'm also going to play some Duke Ellington and some Joe Beam, too. You know, the chromatic lets me go into the Toots Thielemans world of jazz and playing a little bit more jazz on the... So I like to play both. I don't like to say, oh, I just play blues or I just play jazz. I like to play whatever the job requires. And, you know, when I go to play with the Philharmonic in May, I guess they're going to ask me to play... You know, a little bit of that kind of thing, too. It's become an instrument that's associated with country and music and folk music and blues and a little bit of jazz and Celtic music. And it's all good. It's a great instrument. The beautiful thing about the harmonica is you can carry it in your pocket and in your car, and not like a saxophone or a guitar or piano. You got to leave it home. It's kind of portable. I love it.
There's a tune that you got to play if you're a blues cat and you go into a band and you want to play the harp in the band. There's a tune that you have to play, and it's Little Walter, classic.
Yeah.
Whip it out.
Juke.
Best-selling record ever on Chess.
Yeah.
And he's at the heart of so many of those records is the sound of Little Walter. Now, do you hear him? I mean, who inspires you the most of all those?
Well, when I was learning blues harmonica, I went back and did the research. And sure, Little Walter was our, he was our god almost, because he was the guy that took it from the pre-war country blues and kind of brought it into a viable instrument as part of Muddy Waters' band. And then it became like every blues band needs a harmonica because Walter set the mark. And then guys like James Cotton and Shaky Walter Horton came into the Muddy's band, and Junior Wells. And it became like if you had a bona fide Chicago blues band, you needed a harmonica player. And that's Little Walter was the guy that wrote the book on that. And that's why they inducted him into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame 2 years ago.
Let's have a Rob Paparossi harmonica moment. Play me something. Just play anything you want. Can you play without your hands? Like Sonny Boy used to do that?
He actually would put the harmonica in his mouth and play. No, I've never figured that one out. He just, I guess, would bite on it and play different sounds. But then, I need my hands.
Another Sonny Terry is the one who would do the serious whooping. I mean,
yeah, whooping. You heard me do a little bit of the whooping.
Yeah,
and
exactly.
I kind of got that from Sonny Terry. And it's you're adding vocalizations. The cool thing about the harmonica, it becomes the sound of everybody's mouth and head that's playing it, because it takes, everybody has a different shape to their cavity, and it takes on a different, almost like a vocal type sound at times, because it's part of your voice or an extension of your voice that's pushing air through these reeds. So it's pretty cool.
Rob Paparossi is going to be playing this Sunday, 11:30 and 1:30. It's two different shows. Going to be at Darth Ann's Place, and that's at NJ Pack this Sunday, right up the street from WBGO, and he's with me in the blues break. Will you whip out Moon River on Sunday, you think?
I probably will. You know, since I've been revisiting it, I probably will put we'll do a couple of Mancini things, so maybe Days of Wine and Roses.
Because he's going to be playing with the New York Philharmonic on May 11th, you're playing the score live. You're playing the score live of Breakfast at Tiffany's.
Yes, I understand. This was done with the London Symphony Orchestra at Albert Hall about 2 years ago when they brought the movie back in, and now we're going to do it in New York and see how it works.
And I want you and Ed Palermo to do another project, too.
Oh, we got to have a follow-up to Electric Butter.
Indeed. And you need to do a follow-up to Etruscan Soul also. That was a great
that's
record.
A deal.
We got to go out. There's one song I got to play from Etruscan Soul, and that's you with Phoebe Snow, which is such a... Did you know her a long time?
I knew her before we did Etruscan Soul. She kind of... From the mid-80s, I kind of got acquainted with her, and boy, do we miss her.
Here's a song about Monkeying Around.
Yeah.